Sound of Hockey episode 197. We're calling this one the Jaromir Jagr episode. Why are we calling it that, John?
Well, I've got it on good authority that Jaromir Jagr scored 102 points in 1997, 98 season to lead the NHL.
I get it. All right, so 197 isn't quite 1997, but it has all the same numbers in there.
Yeah, if you jumble them up, sure.
Okay. Very good. Jaromir Jagr also was semi in the news last week because he tweeted something funny. He said, hey, NHL GMs, I am also a free agent once again. I'm 6'3", 265 pounds, 50 years old now, slow, but strong in good hands. Can bring experience and like to play only home games. Call me anytime. Also, as the owner of a hockey club in Czech Liga, I am looking to sign a defenseman. No jokes. That's good. Good for you, Jaromir. This is Sound of Hockey. I'm Darren Brown at Darren Fun Brown on the Twitter, joined as always by Andy Ide. Hello, Andy.
How's it going? I'm at Andy Ide on the Twitter.
And John Barr. Hello, John.
Hello, everybody. I'm NHL2 Seattle on the Twitter.
And we are coming to you from Seattle, not Bar Down Studios this week. We are remote for this one. It's because I'm a little under the weather. I'm just getting over celebrating my birthday, I guess, in a way. And I do have to say, you guys did a better job this year of wishing me happy birthday. So thank you for that support.
How was your birthday?
It was very good. And actually, you and I saw each other. We went for some college sodas on Saturday. It was lovely. Played some golf on Sunday. You know, I did want to say, though, you tweeted something out where it was basically like, hey, everybody, it is Darren's birthday today. You didn't directly wish me happy birthday. You just said it is his birthday.
Well, I waited until later in the evening and to send you a intimate text.
Ah, creepy. Anyway, so I'm a little under the weather. And if there's one thing that this pandemic has taught us, even though I don't think I have COVID because I've tested like 10 times and it keeps coming back negative, it's that we stay away from one another when we are in fact under the weather. So that's what we're doing for this week. So just deal with it, listeners. It's only going to be 1 week. We'll go back to studio next week. We start the show with a couple of reviews, as we like to do. We love reading our 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts. So please leave us one if you haven't before. The first one comes from at Davy Jones Doggo on the Twitter. That's a great follow. I'm that unclear is. If Davy Jones Doggo is, well, I guess we're to believe that it is actually Davy Jones the dog, but sometimes I wonder who's actually operating that thing, because I would think that Davy Jones technically lacks the strength of the opposable thumb to be able to tweet. But nonetheless, this says Team Curtis, which I thought was interesting.
Or speak English.
You're right. Right. Team Curtis, longtime listener, first-time reviewer, easily my favorite Kraken podcast. But what motivated me to leave this review is Curtis from the last episode. The bonus episode. It says he was fantastic. Bring him back soon or pull up a fourth chair for him. Fascinating. Very fascinating. He did do a good job. And, you know, maybe we will. Maybe we'll get a fourth microphone for him and have him jump in at least every now and then. Our other 5-star review comes from One-Handed Hobby. Not sure what that means, but I don't know. I don't want to dive into that too much. But it says, duck, duck, green duck, duck, blue duck, duck, gray duck. Seriously, I love the pod. And as a Minnesotan now residing in South Sound, understand that you must always temper excitement and hopes. Can confirm on that one.
Yeah.
It's great being able to hear what's going on around the Seattle area for hockey. Please keep up the great work. Thank you very much for that, Minnesotan living in the South Sound area. That's great. We do have quite a bit to talk about it. You know, a week has gone by since development camp ended, and since we had free agent frenzy, and we ended up recording kind of early on in the week last week. So it feels like it's been a long time since we've talked to you, and a lot of stuff has transpired here, both locally with the Kraken and beyond. So we're just going to dive right into it with our free agent signings within the Seattle Kraken organization. Now, before I do this, I just wanted to get your guys' thoughts as a whole here. And overall, you know, big picture, what did they do? Was it good? Was it bad? What were your immediate reactions to this? John, let's start with you. I'll hang up and listen.
Okay. There was a lot of expectations going into free agency, and it was based on comments that Ron Francis said himself that they were going to be aggressive. They're planning on being aggressive. And, you know, I took that as to spend a lot of money and go after some of the big time free agents. Now, we'll get into it, but didn't quite deliver that. In retrospect, they're probably being smarter than most people are during free agency. And usually I don't like building a team through free agency because that means you're usually getting people on the tail end of their career, signing them for too long. But I was hoping they would deliver and kind of spend more than they should just to put a competitive team on the ice the next couple of years. And I'm not sure we'll kind of like loop back on the final assessment, but that's my kind of general take. What is your takes?
Andy?
Well, it definitely wasn't a frenzy. Around the league, I didn't feel like there was a frenzy. But for Seattle, I think they made some upgrades. How much of an upgrade remains to be seen. Like, I don't know if right now I would say this is a playoff roster, but you never know. And one thing I find interesting, John, you said that you thought they were smart. Francis still seems to be very concerned about salary cap flexibility, and maybe he should. But, in his press conference, he talked about that a little bit. He talked about how things change when they got Shane Wright, because obviously you're not going to go out and try to find a center in free agency when you've got now, what, five of them on your roster with Shane Wright. But he had an interesting comment about the Wright and Beniers' contracts. He wanted to have flexibility when those guys come up in 2 and 3 years, which is a different, like John said, it's a different song than he was singing earlier about we're going to be aggressive. And I guess he never really said what that meant. I guess it was all up to all of us to interpret what aggressive meant, but it didn't feel aggressive to me. And there are a couple of free agents out there they could still be involved in, mainly Niederreiter and Klingberg. We don't know, but it did feel like I'm a little surprised at how little action they took. They did sign a bunch of guys for Coachella Valley, so there was a lot of signings.
Yeah.
But those aren't as exciting to me.
Right.
But
what he meant.
I like
right?
Burkowski fine.
Yeah. Oh yeah, and we're going to talk about that in just a moment. But that could have been what he meant when he said they're going to be, because maybe that was in the context of we need to be aggressive and bringing literally a lot of bodies in to fill out our Coachella Valley team. I don't know, because it was interesting at the end of the season he said that thing about we're going to be really aggressive in free agency. That's our plan. But then somewhere else, and I forget what it might have been just before the draft. But he talked about. He was asked about the Stanley Cup final, and he was like, well, one thing that really stuck out to me was how much these teams were built through draft picks, right? Mm-hmm. And that was the teams in the final. And so that made me think that, like, maybe that shifted the philosophy a little bit, that, like, well, we shouldn't be overly aggressive here at going after some of these people. I also think there's probably some potential that a couple of the guys that they really wanted just didn't end up signing in Seattle. They didn't want to make knee-jerk reactions. And so that's where we ended up, was with just a few kind of tweaks to the roster, right? But no major splashes. Burakovsky, I guess, would be the splashiest of the signings, but even he's a second tier, right? He's not the Johnny Gaudreau. He's not the John Klingberg, Nazem Kadri type of area of free agents. So yes.
Well, I would rather have Burakovsky than Kadri. That's for sure.
I think he's a better fit, but like I think Kadri's looking at 7-8 million, right? Versus 5 years of 5.5.
Yeah, but he's 4 years older than him, right?
Like Kadri is. Yeah.
Kadri is, yeah. So
right.
Like
I think it's a better fit. I wouldn't have really wanted them to do what they would have needed to do to get Kadri. And realistically, it's still possible that Kadri ends up here, but I don't think that's going to happen just because he said that he wants to be a contender, and B, I don't think it's a very good fit for what they're looking for. I think Burakovsky is a great fit, but I think my point is, like, I kind of expected them to really be in on one of the top names out there, whether that was Klingberg or Gaudreau, and maybe they are still in on Klingberg and we just don't know it yet. But it surprised me a little bit that this was what they ended up with. Again, as Andy said, there's still plenty of cap flexibility. I think they have $9.5 million, something like that. And they can technically go over the cap because of Chris Drieger potentially going to long-term engine reserve. So there's a lot of trades to be had, I think, in the coming weeks and months. And I think that there's, like we said earlier, there's still some big names out there. So if they do want to make themselves a playoff team, I think there's still some upgrades to be made. But we'll see. I mean, they made, he said... Francis said that he wants to be a playoff team, but wouldn't it be smart to maybe not be that good for one more year and see what happens in the draft? I don't know. I mean, we'll see, I think, how this shakes out. To your point, I don't know that they're a playoff team yet, but let's talk about some of these signings themselves. So Burakovsky comes in 5x5.5 is his cap hit, 5 years, $5.5 million, I should say. He does have a 10-team modified no-trade clause. again, I like this signing a lot. I think it's a great fit. I do think this is an offensive upgrade. This is a guy who scored 22 goals last year and 61 points. So I think he's a good player. I think he fits in with the system. He's kind of a two-way player. I like this one. And I know, John, you had him targeted even before in kind of your here's some of the players we could go after kind of a thing. What made you think that he was such a good fit?
He can score goals, right? And, you know, he only had 22 goals last year, but he doesn't get the minutes on that team, you know, because there's so many guys in front of him. But at a like a points per 60, he's one of the best on Colorado. Not the best, obviously, but I think he's going to get an elevated opportunity in Seattle, and you'll definitely see him on the power play. What's interesting is he doesn't get a lot of power play goals, but he gets a lot of power play points, which implies like he's not necessarily the trigger man, which I tend to think about when I think of his play style. He's got a wicked shot, and he's going to be fun. He's a, you know, I want to say he's a huge upgrade, but there wasn't much there before. I mean, you can think maybe he kind of takes Donato's spot, but he's like significantly better than Donato. And so that's kind of my take. This is kind of what I wanted, like guys like this. I just expected more of them, right?
Yeah.
So looping back. So,
yep, anyway. I know. Maybe him and Andre Palat, right? Like a couple more of those types of players would have, I think, moved the needle a lot more than what they ended up with. Another player they signed, Justin Schultz, a right shot defenseman, 2 years, $3 million. I do think this is an upgrade. I think that they needed a right shot defenseman. Last year, they had different left shot defensemen filtering through on the third pair right side. So now at least they do. I mean, in theory, they can trot out three right shot defensemen. I still think, you know, I think ideal world, they would have upgraded with two right shot defensemen in this offseason. I still like Will Borgen, but I like him more as like an extra defenseman than the actual third pair defenseman. But nonetheless, I think adding a puck moving right shot kind of guy, I like this one as well. I think it's a good fit. But Andy, what was your thought on Justin Schultz?
I always like him. I think he's decent. Again, it's not one that a big splash, but we talked about that a lot, but I expect him to see him on the power play a lot. Francis talked a lot about what Schultz can do for their power play. Even though he doesn't have huge power play numbers, he did play behind John Carlson and Chris Letang in his previous teams. So he's going to have an opportunity now. I think he's probably one of the best puck movers the team has now. That's a position, along with the right-handed shot, that I thought they really needed last year. So he is a little older, but he does have some Stanley Cup, you know, pedigree in his background. And you know, I think that's a decent signing for how short term it was. And I think they only signed him for 2 seasons. You know, maybe they're thinking in 2 seasons, Riker Evans comes up full time. So we'll see how he does here. But I think he's going to bolster the defense offensively.
And maybe Riker Evans makes the team this year, which adds maybe to their right shot defenseman, to my point earlier. You know why I like Justin Schultz?
Why? Because he's a Badger.
That's correct. Yep. Good guess. Wisconsin Badger. When you say Wisconsin, you've said it all.
Do you remember his entry into the NHL?
Was he was like
originally signed him?
I think
drafted him.
I recall him being one of those that ended up being like a college free agent, right? That everyone was scrambling for when he became available. Like he was going to be this superstar player, right?
The Ducks drafted him. He didn't sign with them, so then he became a free agent. And yes, there was like a bidding war, and the Oilers won. That's where he initially went, I believe.
Yeah.
And then he's bounced around a little bit. But yeah, he was a big news coming out of college.
Yeah, every team wanted him. I remember that. Yeah. And then the other, well, I guess known quantity would be Martin Jones, 1 year, $2 million. So here's the thing with Martin Jones. A couple things. I think his name surprised me a little bit. It wasn't one that I had considered for the spot, but it also, how many goalies would have fit here, right? And we talked about that on the last episode where really, there are only a couple options out there that I think would have taken a one-year deal. What surprised me a little bit was that it was like right when free agency opened, like this was their primary target, right? Like, boom, Martin Jones, done deal, right? We got him, ladies and gentlemen, which I thought that was kind of funny. But now, were there better options that they could have gotten for 1 year? I don't know. It's debatable. I mean, they're in kind of a tough spot, as we mentioned with their goalies before, that they needed to sign a veteran player, right, to play goalie that would take a one-year deal, that would be willing to be a backup. So I think maybe they could have gone after Ilya Samsonov, who ended up with Toronto at, you know, 1 year, $1.8 million. But would Samsonov have wanted to come? I don't know. And Francis said that, you know, Steve Briere, the new goalie coach, he sees something in Martin Jones that he thinks he can work with. So I think it's a fine fit. You know, it's a stopgap. I have no issue with the signing at all. I was a little surprised by the name itself, just because Martin Jones had a couple of tough seasons. But it's a fit. I get it.
He was a big name at one point.
That's right.
Yeah, and he was serviceable in Philly this year. So, and that's exactly what they need, is a serviceable backup, a known quantity, if you know what I mean. So,
yep,
he'll be fine.
He played 30 games in Philly last year, and his save percentage was .900, which that save percentage would have led the Kraken.
Oh, man. John Hayden comes in 1 year, $750K. That's a two-way deal. He did play 56 games for Buffalo last year, so certainly this is just a depth thing. I'm sure he'll spend some time in Coachella Valley if I had to take a guess. But, you know, we're not expecting Riley Sheahan to be back, so maybe he kind of fills that role on the fourth line from time to time when there's injuries. A fun fact, he did fight Jamie Oleksiak this season, so we'll see how that interaction goes in camp. And then oodles of players got signed. Oodles, if you will.
An official oodle.
Yeah, to the Coachella Valley Firebirds. Or, well, we think they're going to be in the Coachella Valley Firebirds. But a couple of them that I thought were interesting. Andrew Podorolski. So I think he's got a chance at playing for the Kraken. And the reason I say that, first off, he signed a two-year deal. It's a one-way deal. So either way, he's going to make $750K, whether he's in the NHL or the AHL. He has been this prolific, unbelievable scorer at the AHL level for his whole career, and he's just one of those guys that's just never gotten a real shot at the NHL level. Even this past year, he got called up to Carolina, played two games, had an assist in both games, so he was a point-per-game player, but then he goes right back down to the AHL, right? And that's just how his whole career has been. He's one of those guys that is just, for whatever reason, he just never gets a shot. With the Chicago Wolves this past year, he had 28 goals, 73 assists, so that was 101 points in 71 games, and he led the team to the Calder Cup. So an interesting signing there. The other one that I personally liked was Magnus Hellberg, another goalie, and the reason I like that is because we mentioned him on Goalie Gear Corner when he was in the Detroit Red Wings system, and he had those very cool Brian's pads that had the spoked wing going up the pad. Remember those ones?
Oh, yeah. Haven't forgot them.
Yeah. John?
I don't quite remember, but I'm excited to see what he pulls out training camp.
But you got to think it'll probably be a Brian setup, right?
Of course. And why would it be like anything less? Yeah.
He's shown some creativity in the past, so you got to think that there's something good coming there. So I appreciate that. Excited to see what Magnus Hellberg will do. Okay, that's been Goalie Gear Corner. It's also been our free agent signings for the Kraken. Anything I missed or anything else you guys wanted to talk about on that note before we move on to some other Kraken-related discussions?
Well, just that it feels like there's still one more roster spot, like an obvious roster spot available in mm-hmm. the forward core. You can kind of pencil like John Hayden in or somebody like that, but that's it seems like there's still a spot. So there might be another signing down the road. Defensively, it seems like they're pretty set, but with Cale Fleury being kind of the what would be the seventh defender, and it depends how much they value him, because if they were to bring in like a Klingberg or something, that would put him on a potential path to get sent down to the AHL, but he's got a clear waiver. So those are just things to kind of keep in mind if anything happens in the next couple of weeks where they sign somebody.
Yeah, I think you're spot on with the roster spots too. Like if you, spot on with your roster spots. if you just look at like a very simple mock-up of like who's going to play on which line, it's like, wait a minute, there's quite obviously a hole here somewhere that needs to get filled. So that's why I think, and John, I know you kind of think that they're more or less done. I think there's still an upgrade coming. That's just my own hunch. I don't know if you remember last year, but they signed a bunch of like kind of mid-tier guys right at the last minute to one-year deals just before
like Johansson and Donato signed really late.
Yeah, right. Both of those guys, and they were on the team the whole year, right? Yeah. So that's it's valid, but and maybe there's just plenty in that range that I'm just not aware of. Obviously, Donato's still out there, but maybe somebody like that's available in September. So,
and speaking of Donato, there was a Ron Francis press conference on free agency day, which was last Wednesday. So he kind of addressed us in the Kraken locker room area there. One of the things that he did mention, because he was asked what went into the decision on not qualifying Ryan Donato last week, which comically we named our episode Donato likely out or something like that. And Ron Francis kind of implied that there's a chance he comes back. So what he said was the only reason that they didn't qualify him was because they didn't want to go to arbitration with him. And so he kind of made it sound like there were still conversations happening with him and his agent, but he didn't really know where they were going to go. So Donato has not signed anywhere. So I personally wouldn't be surprised to see him back with the Kraken, even though last week we were pretty well sold that he was out the door.
Yeah, and he'll sign for less than... they'll sign. If they sign him, it'll be for less than what he would have probably received in arbitration, because that was the whole sticking point.
Yep. Other topics from that presser. They did end up signing Shane Wright to his entry-level deal, as well as Ryan Winterton and Jacob Melanson. I thought that was interesting. Shane Wright came out on the last day of... Well, no, it was during the scrimmage, so not the last day. But he came out and signed his contract on the ice with Ron Francis in front of a big crowd, which I thought that was a pretty cool touch.
That was pretty cool.
Yeah, that was a memorable moment. Well done by a good friend of the pod, Allison Lucan, who was the one who was like emceeing that. That was kind of funny.
and then he threw a fish.
That's right. They had him do the ceremonial eating of the plush fish. So Shane Wright, he did. Francis kind of implied that changed his plan a little bit for free agency, which I thought that was interesting, Andy, because we kind of thought that could be the case, because now all of a sudden they have somebody that they could pencil in as a center potentially for this first season.
They have five of them basically.
Yeah. Right.
And with Beniers, you think you're set there. And the comment he made is you're not going to go out and sign a centerman for 7 years in free agency when you got those two guys there, not only to play, but then he mentioned that their contracts are going to be up in 2 and 3 years. And so that's part of that cap flexibility that he's always talked about from day one and still is with those guys now. So how much of a role that played in the ultimate free agent decisions, it's hard to say, but definitely from a position standpoint, I don't think you're going to go out there and see them sign a center for 7 years.
Well, so I can appreciate using your cap space as a weapon and having that flexibility, but you got to use it. And they didn't really use all of it last year. And they didn't really weaponize it last year. Now, who knows that they had flexibility to move things around and maybe, sign Burakovsky by not going big last year, but they got to use it, and I can appreciate what he's saying, but at the end of the day, he's still got to use that cap space as a weapon.
You would think, right? Yeah. He seems really reluctant to, even though we've been told from day one that the ownership says they can spend to the cap, he seems reluctant to do so for whatever reason.
It's just interesting, right? Like, I don't know how much, we'll see. I just was expecting somebody to, and maybe that comes in the next month, right? Because, Darren, you were talking about potential trades down the road. There's a lot of talk that Kadri's on the, sitting on the sidelines while teams try to clear cap space. Well, here's Seattle's opportunity, right?
Yeah. So,
well, something to keep an eye on. That's all I'm saying.
And then last piece, he did imply that the team was interested in Johnny Gaudreau. He didn't directly say that. I asked him if that was any truth to that rumor that Seattle would be interested in him. He said something like, yeah, well, we're interested in all players coming to play here, which I thought was funny.
Classic Francis answer.
Yeah. Thanks for narrowing it down.
But he said something along the lines of like, but with some players, they want to play in certain areas of the country or certain markets or something like that, which tells me that there is at least a conversation, right? And like, this is why Seattle probably wouldn't be the fit for Johnny Gaudreau, who instead, just as everybody expected, signed with the Columbus Blue Jackets for less money than he was offered by his old team in Calgary. But interesting stuff there. I mean, just an interesting week in general. I thought, development camp was really cool to see some of these young kids. We haven't talked to you all since the scrimmage happened. I thought the scrimmage, Matty Beniers absolutely dominated from start to finish. He was fantastic to watch. I thought Shane Wright showed some fun glimpses. I don't think he's quite ready to dominate the way that I think Matty Beniers might be. But, nonetheless, I think he's going to fit right in. So that was cool. The whole experience was pretty great.
My thought on Wright at that scrimmage was if they were doing any kind of analytics, he had a very good Corsi night or afternoon, whatever it was.
He was... He was driving.
A lot of chances. Yeah, a lot of chances from his team, but they just weren't going in.
Mm-hmm. Although I think his team won, didn't they? I think they did.
Yes.
Yeah.
But that's a little sketchy because the dark blue team had just played while the light blue team that Wright was on was resting. And then for the championship game, they had just played.
Yeah, and I don't think the dark blue team had a loss going into the championship game.
Yeah, you're right. That was Beneers' team.
Yeah. So anyway, a couple other pieces of Kraken-related news. Eddie Olczyk. What he is apparently joining the broadcast team, leaving the Chicago Blackhawks organization after a long time. Now, nothing has been made official by the team yet, which I think is interesting. It makes me think that there's still some things to be ironed out, but it also sounds like it's pretty much a done deal that he is, in fact, coming to Seattle. John, any idea what we can expect here, like how he's going to fit in?
Not really, other than it sounds like JT Brown's still part of the plan, which is great because we all like JT Brown. He's a friend of the pod, and I think he's even doing a pretty good job, and he's improving. So, but it sounds like he's still in play. I don't know if they're going to go like a three-person team with somebody between the benches, or it's kind of a rotation, or some of those guys kind of rotate through the studio, which I think would also be beneficial. And I still think Allison has a bigger role to play here, but we'll see how that goes because she's getting a lot of national attention. I'm always worried somebody's going to pick her off and take her out of Seattle. So
listen,
like ESPN.
You don't need to even put that out in the world, okay? Let's just...
Should we strike that from the record?
No, of course we'd be happy for her if something like that happened, but we don't need to put that out.
I want her to do whatever she wants to do, but at the same time, I hope it is in Seattle, whatever it is.
Correct, yeah. But I mean, what a crew though, huh? Like John Forslund, Eddie Olczyk, kind of. JT Brown, Allison Luke, like that's phenomenal. So good stuff. It makes me almost a little sad that I don't get to watch more of the home broadcasts, although maybe I'll just start recording them and watching them back so that I can just hear how great the coverage is. But
it is anyway, true because I don't get to see it either, right? Because I'm going to the games as well, but not so,
you know, good problem.
I get to hear it.
Yeah, maybe I'll try to force myself to sit next to Andy more often next year so that I can hear John Forslund. And
I hear Forslund's play-by-play like it's right next to me, like clear as day.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and I'd like to hear Everett too, honestly, because I've heard him a little bit on the radio when I'm like, you know, going to play hockey when the Kraken are playing, and he sounds awesome. I'd love to hear him more.
Yeah, Everett.
I barely had a chance to hear him because I'm never listening on the radio.
Everett is who I hear in the press box because he's usually right behind me where I sit. So I get the live radio coverage of what's happening, which is pretty fun. Some rumblings that Olczyk might have some say in managerial decisions as well. So there's still some things to be worked out here. I'm really curious how his role is going to fit both on the broadcast and away from it. That's something that he said, I think, on a podcast or a radio interview or something like that. So we'll see. I'm sure there's going to be some official news on that in the coming days. The other pieces of Kraken news, and yes, there's been quite a bit. Coachella Valley, they announced that they do have their first home game on the docket. So that's going to be December 18th when they open their official arena. So that means between now and December 18th, obviously they're going to have to find places to play. This does align with what Francis said several months ago, which is that the team is going to open in Seattle, have their home base in Seattle, until their practice rink opens, which he thinks is going to be like end of October, beginning of November, and then they'll shift down there. And I guess they'll play some games on the road in between.
Yeah, I think they talked about having something like 21 games before they even have this home opener.
Mm-hmm.
And we know they're going to play at least one game at Climate Pledge. And then they're also looking at other areas, other rinks in the area. Now, that's AHL schedule. The whole schedule should come out next week. At least that's what I'm anticipating. So I'm kind of excited to see how that all plays out with the AHL up here.
Teams have been announcing their home openers, and the Firebirds are going to be playing the first home game for the Calgary, whatever they're going to be named. The former Stockton Heat that are now playing in Calgary are hosting Coachella Valley for their home opener. So,
okay, interesting.
There's one road game we know of.
Okay.
Yeah.
The last piece of Kraken news, I finally were getting there, is that Morgan Geeky filed for salary arbitration. So what that means, and you guys can fill in the gaps for me if I explain something wrong, but between now and I think it's the end of July, he can still negotiate a contract with the Kraken. If they can't come to terms on something, then they go to a arbitration hearing with a third party neutral judge or arbitrator, I guess you'd call him. The arbitrator then kind of looks at the cases, the Kraken basically make a case to say we want to pay him as little as possible. His team makes a case to say here's why he should get paid as much as possible. And then the arbitrator awards a contract that's 1 year. And no matter what he awards or she awards, that's what they pay him. And it's a 1 year deal. So the good news is they're guaranteed to get something done. The bad news is if they only sign him to 1 year, obviously he becomes a free agent after this 1 year. So did I miss anything on explaining that? I saw a couple of people asking what that meant.
I thought that was valid. The reality though, is that very few of these actually reach the arbitration date.
Right.
Usually this gives them some more time to settle or figure out a better contract that appeases everybody. It's kind of like a trial, right? Like where, you know, things tend to settle right before the trial date. And so that's what I imagine is going to happen. So one thing to keep an eye out is the term, which I'm excited to see, hopefully a multi-year term, but we'll see. And I know he's been in town actually, last couple of weeks. I don't know consistently, but he's been in town the last couple of weeks, doing some skill development. So maybe they're talking.
Yeah.
Speaking of being in town, I saw on Philip Grubauer's Instagram that he was jet skiing on Lake Washington the other day. So he's also in town.
Nice. And that's just weeks after he was in Lederhosen in Germany. So
yes. And he was at the, he was at KCI for some of the development camp.
I saw that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. And then, so on that topic of arbitration, that's our kind of our Kraken talk. Matthew Tkachuk. So interesting situation here, following on the heels of Johnny Gaudreau going to Columbus and kind of telling Calgary to bugger off. Matthew Tkachuk has said to the team effectively that he's not going to re-sign long term. So the team has filed for, what do they call it? Team elected arbitration, which is pretty rare, but it happens occasionally, I guess, which would tell us that, you know, best case scenario for Calgary is that they're going to get him back for 1 year. This is a very interesting development because this pretty much guarantees that he's going to get traded, right? Because why would they keep him around for 1 year, go through arbitration? That doesn't make any sense. So,
well,
it seems very likely that he's going
to
get traded.
I believe today they also gave his agent permission to go seek a trade.
Mm-hmm. That is true. That's the report. But, also the thing that's a little sticky about that is that allegedly he wants to go play somewhere closer to home. He's from St. Louis.
Yeah.
But the list of teams that he mentioned were not like confirmed, and somebody said that the list was incorrect. So
the list wasn't.
Yeah. So just backing up a little bit. So what happened here is he was qualified. He got a qualifying offer and then elected not to go to arbitration. And so what that means is he basically is saying, I am going to sign my 1 year qualifying offer and it's going to take me right to free agency.
Mm hmm.
And so then that's when the team decided, because I think he would have needed to sign by Wednesday of this week, the qualifying offer. But now the team has gone, like you said, the team has gone the team arbitration to give them more time to negotiate. Well, the reality is it doesn't look like it's going to happen. It's going to matter because he's basically said, I'm not coming back. So,
So things are going great in Calgary. Man, that's... You know, I feel kind of, even though they're a divisional rival of the Kraken, right? I don't like seeing teams, especially teams that are like so beloved in their market. I don't like seeing things suddenly kind of fall apart for them like this. So I do feel bad for the fans of Calgary. Whether or not, you know, I'd love to see Matthew Tkachuk become a Kraken, but I think that's really far-fetched. I don't think he gets all that much closer to home with the deal with Seattle. And I just don't know that, like... Because this is going to be quite the bounty, I think, to land Tkachuk, whoever trades for him. Not only do they have to have the agreement that, like, yes, he's going to be willing to sign long-term with whoever they trade him, but also I know that's, you know, Calgary's going to want some actual players back, and I just don't know that Seattle has the chips there.
Can I read you guys a stat about the Flames?
Nope, you cannot. Okay.
No, I don't like stats.
They've lost Gaudreau, and it looks like they're going to lose Tkachuk. When both of those were on the ice together for them last year, they outscored their opponents 141-44. With both of them off the ice on the bench, they were outscored 148-131. So that's a big chunk of their offense that's potentially walking out the door. It's going to hurt.
Things are not going well in Calgary. This is true. Okay, around the league, there are some trades. I hear my voice getting like more and more crackly as we go here, which is interesting. I'm sure that sounds nice for you listeners at home. trades around the league. Matt Murray goes to Toronto for future considerations, our old friend. Should we do interesting or carry on? Should we do it that way?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, is that interesting?
Not really, actually.
Okay. Cam Talbot to Ottawa for Philip Gustafson. Is that interesting?
No.
Is it interesting to you?
I think it's kind of interesting, yeah, because this is the follow-up. It's the fallout to him, his agent complaining about Marc-Andre Fleury and the re-signing there for 2 years, and now they're going to be a 50-50 split and blah, blah, blah. What I think is a little funny about it is that I don't get the sense that Talbot necessarily wanted his agent to get him traded, but then he went and like made a big deal, and now all of a sudden he got traded to Ottawa, which is a little funny. Brent Burns to Carolina. Interesting or carry on?
This is pretty interesting. I mean, Burns was an icon in San Jose, and people question the big contract that he signed, but he's played phenomenal, and offensively he's going to be great in Carolina. So, you know, who knows how long I think he's only got 3 or 4 more years, so he's getting close to the end of his contract, but he's still playing pretty well. So,
yeah.
Sharks retain some of his salary?
I don't believe so. Deal. No.
Okay, I'm just curious.
Yeah. And Burns, I mean, he's getting older, but man, he plays enormous minutes still. So, it's a good trade.
Oh, yeah.
And it's made more interesting because Carolina also somehow got Max Pacioretty and Dylan Coughlin from Vegas, also for just future considerations. So
That's it.
Nothing went back. It's just a full on cap dump for the Vegas Golden Knights, who continue to Ponzi scheme their way through the NHL, as John once cleverly said.
Well, and we knew they would have to do something like this somehow to get out of their salary cap situation. But man, that doesn't look good when you look at the trade. It may work out for everybody, but when you just hear those names for basically nothing, you kind of chuckle.
Yeah. So as you see, you know, Ron Francis continuing to be a little bit careful with his salary cap situation. Just think, yes, they could be more aggressive. Yes, they probably could sign bigger names, go to and over the cap and put guys in LTIR and all this stuff. But then look at how quickly things have unraveled for the Vegas Golden Knights. So just keep that in mind as we go towards building a long-term future successful Kraken team. John Marino to the Devils for Ty Smith. That one I think is interesting, mostly because I love Ty Smith. I've been a huge, huge Ty Smith fan since he was with the Spokane Chiefs.
Yeah, and it was a little shocking to me. I know he hasn't, you know, really hit his stride yet, but to see the Devils ship off a first-round pick that's only 22 years old, that's a little jarring to give up on a kid that soon. And I know, you know, Marino's a good defensive defenseman, so maybe they were looking for more of that. But, man, Pittsburgh gets him at 22. And with his potential and the ceiling there, that's good for them too. Good trade for both teams.
Yeah, I think so too. Good trade for Pittsburgh, I think.
And the last trade that we wanted to comment on, Jeff Petrie and Ryan Poehling go also to Pittsburgh for Mike Matheson. Is that one interesting, or should we just carry right on to free agent signings?
Carry on. I mean, okay. Jeff Petrie had a great playoff a couple years ago, but you know.
I'll never forget his bloody eye.
Yeah, devil eyes.
He saved a goal. Yeah.
Yep. Okay, so free agent signings. We're also going to do interesting or carry on for free agent signings. Obviously, Gaudreau is interesting in Columbus. Sounds like the other team that he was really considering was New Jersey. It almost sounded like he was heading towards signing with them. And then in the 11th hour, Columbus came out of nowhere, which I think is funny. And he was on the Spit and Chicklets podcast to talk about it. And I thought it was funny because he was like, yeah, Columbus didn't really call me until 4 p.m. Like, why would I don't understand how that even works, you know? Like, how are they just like, oh, you know, maybe we should make a run at Johnny Gaudreau for $9+ million, right? Like, I just thought that was kind of hysterical. But he seems excited to play for that team. You know, I think he deep down wanted to play for Philadelphia, and somehow Chuck Fletcher just kind of bungled that because he couldn't get players moved off the roster in time to open up cap space. So I think Columbus got a lot better with this signing. I thought this was a fascinating place for him to sign. I know that everybody was really shocked to see him land there.
I can't wait to see Columbus's power play with Gaudreau and Line A, right? Amazing is that going to be? Let's hope at least.
Yeah. Well, then they have the big shot, right? And then they have the super smooth playmaker, and it's pick your poison scenario. So yeah, you're right about that.
What I thought was cool about this is one, and he previously was afraid of the cannon there. There's video of him flinching when the cannon goes off. But also, Kent Johnson, who was Columbus's draft pick last year and teammates with Manny Beniers at Michigan, it was wearing number 13, and he wore that number because of Johnny Gaudreau, because that was his favorite player. And he willingly gave it up to him. He was like, it's your number, you get it. So no you know, controversy there, but I thought that was pretty cool too, that you know, young up and coming star was willing to give up his number.
Yeah. Ryan Strome to Anaheim, $5 million. Is that interesting?
It was somebody I thought the Kraken could be in play for, but
could use, three players to Chicago: Max Domi, Andreas, happy to see you, and Colin Blackwell. I think it's only interesting because I like Colin Blackwell.
And right, that's him. The only interesting part about that whole line. Yeah,
I think so. Mason Marchment to Dallas, 4 years, $4.5 million. Interesting, or carry on.
Good pickup. Would have been nice to see him on the Kraken.
Mm-hmm. Andrew Kopp, Ben Chiarot, David Perron, and Dominic Kubalik to Detroit. I think this is interesting because the Iser plan, as it's called, has taken a big step forward here. I think this team, just in general, they also got Ville Husso in goal. I think that this is going to be a much improved team. I still don't know if they're a playoff team, but like, you mix in all the talent they just added with some of those young studs, you know, Moritz Seider and Lucas Raymond, I think they have a good chance to at least be competing for a playoff spot this year.
Yeah, but that would mean somebody needs to drop out of that division, and I'm not sure there are any candidates to drop out of that division. So,
and that's why I say I don't necessarily think they're a playoff team.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think they might be in the mix. And, you know, John, you brought something up the other night, which I thought was pretty funny, when we were thinking back to New Jersey had made a bunch of splashes in the offseason. I think it was either last year or 2 years ago. And we were like, you know what? They're going to be a playoff team for sure. And then they didn't come close.
Yeah.
They were horrible, right? And so I think we kind of wait and see on this team. But there's no question that they definitely made some improvements.
Wait, wasn't that the bet we had?
The hot dish? It might have been.
No, it was the Flyers making the playoffs.
No, everybody picked different teams.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I had the Flyers. Somebody had New Jersey and somebody else had the Rangers or something. Anyway,
All I know is the team that I picked was terrible.
Yeah.
All right, let's carry on. Jack Campbell to the Edmonton Oilers, 5 years, $5 million. Interesting, or carry on.
Addresses a need.
Sure does.
For at least the short term. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, 5 years. That's like medium term.
I know, but there's a question if he's like a really good goalie. Okay. And so that's all I'm saying.
That's fair.
Andre Palat. I'm sure he'll be serviceable and fine for the next year or two. That's all I'm saying.
More serviceable than Mike Smith.
Yes.
Andre Palat to the New Jersey Devils, 5x6. Another one that I think would have been nice to have in Seattle, but realistically, that's a pretty expensive deal for him. Yeah, I agree with you on that. So I'm kind of okay that didn't happen for the Kraken.
Right.
Vincent Trocheck to the New York Rangers, 7 years, $5.625 million for Vincent Trocheck. Is that interesting?
Seems like a lot. Yeah, a lot.
Yeah.
Claude Giroux to the Ottawa Senators, 3 years, $6.5 million. Interesting, I think, because you add him in with Cam Talbot and Alex DeBrincat, and this is a team, and they re-signed Josh Norris for a huge contract. I think this is a team also, like the Detroit Red Wings, that's much improved. They are a team, as Pierre Dorion
would say. They are a
team. They're finally a team.
Yeah, I believe it now more than previously when he actually said that, right, that they are in fact a team. So I saw Pierre Dorion get locked out of the owner's suite or the GM suite at Climate Pledge this year when the Senators came. Thought that was kind of funny. Hayden Fleury to the Tampa Bay Lightning, 2 years, $750K, a former Kraken. Interesting there, just because he's a former Kraken. What'd you guys think about that one?
Yeah, I mean, I hope he finds some consistent playing time.
Yeah, good spot for him. Good spot. He should be able to shine there.
Cali Yarncruck, another former Kraken, to Toronto, 4 years, $2.1 million. I think that's a nice deal for him. You wanted him back?
Yeah.
Well, you do have a Yarncruck jersey, don't you?
That yeah, didn't age but very it's, well. It's like he's just not the goal scorer they need. $2.1 million. Yeah, $2.1 million, that seems so cheap.
Yeah, right? I know. It seems like such a good deal.
Man, I'm I'm pretty bummed.
I mean, Toronto doesn't have a whole lot of cap space, so they may have, I don't know if that's a discount or not, but man, 4 years for 2.1, he's a quality player.
Yeah, I don't know what the market is for him, right? Or what it was. It seemed, I saw projections that would be a lot higher, but...
Yeah, you think it would be.
I think he may have hurt himself in Calgary. Like, I don't, not physically, but like, I just think he hurt his stock.
Oh, his stock?
Oh, I agree. Yeah. I agree. That's why I thought it would have been a good opportunity for Seattle to bring him back, but that's right.
Darcy Kuemper to Washington, 5 years, $5.25 million. I think that's a big-time overpay for somebody who just won the Cup, despite not having fantastic stats in the Stanley Cup Final. Dylan Strome also to the Capitals, and our friend of the Kraken, Marcus Johansson, back to the Capitals. So that's it. I guess we don't really need to ask you if that's interesting or not, because that's the last one that we had written down.
Well, but they paid Marcus Johansson more than Toronto's paying Yarncrook. Going back to Yarncrook, I would have paid more for him than Johansson.
Would agree. So the players are still out there. I know we've kind of alluded to it, but John Klingberg has not been signed. Nazem Kadri has not been signed. Nino Niederreiter, Evan Rodriguez, Sonny Milano are a few names that are still out there. So I don't know if any of those are really fits for the Kraken. I think Niederreiter could be. I think Klingberg could be. But whether or not they're interested in coming here or Seattle is interested in those players, we don't know. But maybe we'll find out at some point. Weekly one-timers. We now move on to that segment. Weekly one-timers. Whoosh. Our first and only weekly one-timers. Whoosh. The PHF is expanding to Montreal. John, our PHF correspondent, what do you got on this one?
Yeah, it's been rumored for a while. Nice to see, but they're expanding to Montreal for the 2022-23 season, which is interesting. They announced the franchise after players have been signing. So I'm not sure the logistics there, but that's a plan. It will be the first time since the CWHL folded their team in 2019 that there's a professional team in Montreal. Okay. And, you know, keep in mind, they already have the Toronto team up there. So it's going to be interesting. And supposedly their schedule is throughout the province. Like they don't necessarily have a home arena, but they're kind of, at least in the first season, they're going to play in a bunch of different arenas throughout the province. So that's kind of cool. Hopefully it's because that's what they want to do, not because that's what they have to do.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that wraps up our very short weekly one-timers. Whoosh. And we close the show with our tweets of the week. Andy, your tweet of the week.
My tweet of the week comes from Evil Gritty.
Mm-hmm. Uh-oh.
I've never heard of that Twitter handle before, but I believe he deals in kind of made-up quotes, but this one's kind of funny. And I say that because his bio says, sorry you fell for it. But he made up a quote for Flyer GM Chuck Fletcher on pursuing Matthew Tkachuk, now that we talked about him earlier. And the quote he comes up with, everyone would love to have a guy like that on their team. The truth is, pulling off that type of trade would require a lot of hard work. And I just bought a new jet ski. I like the team we built here.
Which is kind of in line with what Fletcher said about trying to sign Gaudreau, where he was like, there's just no way for us to make the cap space for somebody like Gaudreau, which I think is just ridiculous and a ridiculous statement.
It's a parody quote that I wish were real.
Yeah. And somebody there, I forget who it was, but there was some like actual media person that retweeted it and was like, oh man, here's the quote of the week. Right. And it was like, God, so obviously, a fake quote.
Evil Gritty said that right in his bio. Mm-hmm. Said, sorry you fell for it.
It's not Evil Gritty's fault. It's the fault of whoever didn't read the bio. So, John, do you have a tweet of the week?
I don't.
Okay, that's fine. I actually have two tweets of the week, so I will go ahead and read those for you in your place. My first one comes from Steve Warren of TSN. It says TSN Steve is his name. It says, Giroux and DeBrincat meet the media, and it's a picture of Claude Giroux, quite obviously, with his little kid at the podium. So that's pretty funny because he's indicating that.
Taking a shot at DeBrincat's height.
DeBrincat is like a little kid. Hilarious.
Yes.
My other one comes from Sammy Hudes, H-U-D-E-S. That could be pronounced Hoods, which sounds a lot like nudes, but I don't think that's how you pronounce it. It says mood, and it's a picture of the outside of the Saddle Dome, except on the word Saddle Dome, the DLE is not illuminated anymore, like it burned out. And it, so it just says Sad Dome, which is pretty funny. And that is what the mood is like in Calgary these days. Hey, this has been a fun and relatively quick remote episode. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you again to Davy Jones Doggo and Right Hand Hobby for the 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts. Leave your 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and we'll read it on the next episode. You also can rate us on Spotify, so don't forget to do that. Subscribe on Stitcher, subscribe on Spotify, subscribe on Apple Podcasts. We'll talk to you all next week for episode 198. Cheers.